This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
Welcome to The Gardening Show. I'm Igor alongside, as always, all season long, and for the last time this season, Mr. Master Gardener Bob Harris. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Igor.
So, what is on your mind today?
Today I'd like to talk about winter protection, especially for those newly planted trees. A newly planted tree, usually they're young, and their bark is thin, not thickened up and prepared for winter, especially a lot of the trees that we buy at nurseries and so on come from areas where they are grown very quickly, and the weather may be a little more pleasant. So the bark is kind of thin, and it's
susceptible.
Yeah, that's the word. Holy crow. There's one to what we call frost crack or winter damage. And that's going to happen mostly on the south side of the tree. Maybe some of you have noticed, you know, a crack or a split in some of the trunks of your trees. Most generally is on the south side, where that winter sun hits it, warms it up, and then when the sun goes down, the temperature goes down real quickly, and that continues, and it causes a crack from the ice expanding in the trunk of your tree, just under the bark, in the Cambrian layer. So it's a good idea to protect those young trees for the first 2 or 3 years with a tree wrap of some sort. Now, there's a lot of different ways to do it. There are products you can buy that's called tree wrap. It looks like a big roll of tape, but it's not sticky. And you wrap that around in a spiral going up the trunk from as low as you can to as high as you can. And that'll protect it from that freeze-thaw that may be happening in the winter. Now, you can also use cardboard or heavy paper, wrap it around and secure it some way so it won't come off through the winter. And that'll also protect the trunk. So that's important. Now, there are some of those tender shrubs. I'm going to say like a Japanese maple, a young Japanese maple, only 1 foot, 2 foot, 3 foot tall. They may need some protection too through the winter, especially if we get an ice and snow buildup. They can tend to bend and break. So it's a good idea to either wrap them with burlap or even go further and build a little teepee like out of plywood, so that snow and ice can't build and cause damage to that young tree. Especially, again, that Japanese maple, because they are a real cherished plant there.
How do you know when it's no longer a quote-unquote young tree? How many years do you have to do this?
After it's been in your yard for 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
Then it's adapted to our climate, and the bark will thicken up. And then it can take care of itself. So, but those first 2 or 3 years, you know, really important. Another thing, a lot of trees nowadays are what we call grafted, and where they'll take a rootstock that's extremely hardy, and then graft. I can't think of a better term. Graft. A very ornamental plant on top of it. That's where they fuse the two together. Now, that area where they have fused together usually is a swollen area. And that can be extremely tender. So this is going to be the exception. You know, weeping cherries are well known for this. Some of them are grafted right at the ground level. That needs to be protected for a long, long period of time. Years. Some are grafted up high where you have the rootstock and then a tall trunk, and then they're grafted at the top, so it weeps, right? Weeping cherry. So that's really not a full tree. That's a shrub plant grafted on top of a tree trunk. And that area is swollen. And that area, too, is very susceptible, especially after the tree loses all its leaves, to the winter damage. So that area should be wrapped. Just on those trees, any of those weeping trees that have been grafted, or any ornamental tree. I'm not talking about maples and oaks, you know. They're all grown on their own roots, their own stem. But a lot of the ornamental trees have been grafted in order to make them hardy for our zone, or to even just grow much quicker and stronger. So those graft unions need to be protected, and not by piling up mulch around that graft union. That can cause a rot and eventually kill the tree. But by that wrap every year, put that around there. Now, it's important that after the winter, come spring, you remove that wrap, because now that protected it through the winter, now it can be a harm, because it's just like a Band-Aid on you. If you leave it on too long, you know, your skin gets a little tender there. Same thing with a tree. And also, it can harbor a lot of insects and pests underneath that wrap. So only leave the wrap on through the winter, and then remember to take it off as soon as you can in the spring. So mulch, another winter protection. Any of those new plants? It's a good idea to put a little extra layer of mulch around them, not touching the trunk, that'll keep that soil from this time of year. We quite often get a real cold streak where the ground can freeze, and then we'll end up with a warm streak, you know, for a few days, and it all thaws out. That freeze and thaw is what damages the tree, especially in the root section. So a layer of mulch will help protect that soil from that freeze and thaw. It's like a blanket. Once the soil freezes, that mulch will keep it frozen, or it'll stop it from freezing, and the roots can continue to be safe and even continue to grow all the way through winter. A lot of people think, well, my maple tree's lost all its leaves, and now it's dormant. The top part is, but the roots continue to grow as weather permits all the way through winter. They will continue to search out nutrients and water and expand their zone out there. So some protection in the winter is a great idea for those trees and shrubs that you have. Give them a little extra protection, especially those new ones or those grafted ones. And I know sometimes it's hard to tell which ones are grafted, which ones are not. Just look at the trunk and look for that swollen area. It may be extreme, or it may be just slightly swollen. You can tell that that was a grafted tree, or from wherever you bought it, you know, ask them, is this a grafted tree? Do I need to protect it in the winter?
If you see like a knuckle-looking kind of thing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
A tree knuckle.
Yeah. You're going to find it on trees, not really shrubs. Oh, I thought you wanted to say something else.
I'm just clearing my throat.
Oh, okay. Some other winter protection, too. You know, if you had a lot of trees in your yard and the leaves fall, make sure you get those leaves out of the shrubs, especially the evergreen shrubs, because they will block out sunlight, and that can cause a lot of damage, and it can collect a lot of snow and ice, too. So try to get those leaves out with your blower or even with a rake. Just comb through the shrub gently, and you'll get those leaves out of there. And that will help protect that shrub a lot better. What other winter protection? Oh, for deer. If you have a lot of deer like I do in my yard, some of us may want to put up deer fencing to protect that shrub. Of course, there's a lot of other ways, too. There's a lot of deer away sprays. They have to be reapplied quite often, but they do work if you're real good at it and can reapply from time to time. There are other ways. One of the ways that I like to do, and maybe it's frowned on, but I like to feed the deer. I get the cracked corn at the store, and I'll put a pile of it out there. They'll prefer that over my shrubs. Yeah, they're going to nibble on my shrubs still a little bit, you know, to check out. If I forget to put the corn out, what can they feed on? But usually it's very, very minimal damage. Most shrubs will grow right back as long as the deer haven't defoliated it totally.
Yeah. But then they're like always coming back for more, and then you better have that cracked corn out there,
or else
they'll be nibbling.
So if you're going to feed the animals to keep them out of your shrubbery, make sure that you're able to continue it, and that'll be right from now until March, April. March can be the worst month. As a matter of fact, for deer damage, because at that time they're really waking up, they're getting very hungry, and there's not really a lot growing out there in the woods or pastures, so they're going to attack your shrubs. So that can be the most important time, right around March. In my experience, that's what I found. I noticed a lot of times where I said, geez, the deer left my shrubs alone all winter, and then come March, all of a sudden they start chewing on them like crazy. And that can happen just in one night where they can defoliate a shrub. So keep your eye on that. You know, there's several ways to protect them.
I wonder if they are affected, like if you put a motion light or something like that out there, do they?
Yeah, I got that too, and that doesn't seem to bother them at all. Oh, not okay. At all.
Kind of like when, like a deer in headlights, right? They just stand there looking at you. Dumb.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, no, this light means danger. Run, stupid.
It's almost like, thanks for turning on the light. Now I can see better. motion lights, in my experience, they do not work to keep deer and other animals away from my shrubbery. But also, most of my shrubbery is decades old. So there's plenty for me and for them. They've never really defoliated any of my shrubs totally. They always grow back and show no sign of deer damage throughout the rest of the year. So there is that too. You know, a lot of people have those monster yews and rhododendrons. You don't really need to protect them, in my experience. What little damage you're going to do is insignificant.
I was just thinking about, what about like as a deterrent? A lot of people have those Halloween motion detector witches and stuff like that where you walk in front of it and then it pops up.
Yeah. Well, it may scare the animals a couple times, but eventually they'll get used to them. And
I don't know if you saw the video online. There's one that was going around on somebody's porch. They had a ring camera light.
Yeah.
Camera. And there was a possum eating their Halloween candy or whatever it was out there. And then all of a sudden the witch comes to life and the thing jumps 10 feet in the air. Oh, that was great.
Yeah, there are those, and they work for a short time.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
But again, we're talking about all winter long, and it's not going to hold up through all that.
Especially when an animal gets hungry, you know, all bets are off.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to eat anything. So even the shrubs that say they're deer-proof at times are not deer-proof. You know, if a deer gets hungry enough or the woodchuck or whatever, you know, it's going to munch on that plant. So be aware, keep track of your plantings. And if you need to put out some protection, again, you know, the deer fence is probably the number one way of taking care of them. You know, that deer fence, it's just a plastic netting like you put out. And it really disappears. It doesn't look unsightly. It is a little bit of work to apply it and then take it off in the spring. But you can save it and use it year after year after year.
But it's not like ungodly, like the like bright neon orange snow fence. It's
right.
Not that.
It's not like that at all.
Yeah.
It really disappears. No one's even going to know when they drive by that you have that deer netting over there. But also there are some very tender shrubs out there, like some of the hydrangeas, the ones that bloom either pink or blue. They're very tender. So it's a good idea to wrap them with burlap. That will stop those dry winter winds from going through that shrub because it has no leaves now. And as it goes through there, it's pulling the moisture out of the flower buds. Because that particular hydrangea sets its flower buds a year in advance. Other hydrangeas will make their flower buds come spring. They're well protected. They don't need it. It's just that one hydrangea that needs winter protection in order for it to bloom.
Now, we were talking about the deer. Amber wrote on our Facebook.
Yeah.
She said, what about the rabbits? Last year, I actually tried feeding them, but I ended up noticing they chewed a lot of my perennials, my Rose of Sharon, Burning Bush, even my my blueberry bush.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Again, you may have to, well, it's hard to put tree wrap on a bush that has several stems. So, again, maybe that bird netting. You could wrap it around that lower section, the height of what a rabbit or a woodchuck could chew on. That may help right there.
That's tricky, though, because, you know, we know rabbits, woodchucks, they chew through stuff.
Yeah, they do.
So
yeah.
That's just what they do.
But they really dislike that material. That's
enough, right?
Yeah.
That's
enough.
Crazy. Just the feel of something that they're not expecting.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, as soon as their nose touches that, you know, they just jump away. They just really dislike it a lot.
So a little bit of netting does a lot of good?
Yeah, does a lot of good. There are other ways, too. I've used the mothballs sprinkled around the base of a shrub. That does help for a while, but, of course, they're going to melt away, especially if we get a wet winter, so have to be reapplied. There is all those sprays, deer off and deer away, and all those neat names. They do work, too. But again, have to be reapplied, especially if we have a wet winter where that washes it all away. So have to be reapplied. Other than that, you know, it's pretty hard to stop nature. It's just something we have to deal with, but we can try.
Yeah.
You know,
and there are options.
Yep. There are options. Just remembering what shrubs or perennials those animals really like, maybe there are ways to protect them. Another way, you know, is boxwood and lavender, and there's a couple other plants. All those animals really don't like those plants, and so you could place them real close by, and hopefully that will deter those animals too. But again, when an animal really is starving, there's nothing going to stop it. So we just have to be prepared for that. That's just nature. It's going to happen.
Or I wonder if maybe take a little bit of your suggestion of what you do with the deer. Maybe detract them from the stuff you don't want them to eat with something that they do.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm kind of a believer in that feeding them is probably easier than fighting them off.
If you have a leftover head of lettuce or something like that you don't want to eat anymore, toss that in the backyard. The rabbits will munch that.
Yeah, carrots, lettuce, the cracked corn is great. All the animals like it. I've even seen coyotes eating my cracked corn.
Well, I better not have any coyotes in my neighborhood. We have too many dogs.
Yeah. I hope I got enough time here. Also, what I wanted to talk about was terrariums for those people that want to garden indoors.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, we'll take a break and we'll start talking about that. Is that what you brought in?
Yes.
Okay, you brought in some containers we'll talk about, and we'll talk terrariums. And that'll be next right here on The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM.
You know it's coming. That colder weather is on the way. Make sure you're ready with a visit to Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford. It's not too early to start stocking up on wood pellets for your heating stove. If it's time to replace your pellet stove, see Worth W. Smith for their line of quality Harman stoves. You'll also find a big selection of stove pipes and other heating supplies in stock. And don't forget the antifreeze for your RV. Be prepared for the weather ahead. If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
And we're back with the gardening show on B107.5 FM. And Bob Harris, our master gardener, is here talking with us. We were talking about winter care for young trees and plants. Also how to keep those pesky deer and rabbits off of your beloved flowers and shrubs and trees. But we're also going to be talking about terrariums today, which is actually really, they can look really, really neat in your house.
Yes, they can. And you can grow plants in Bradford that you normally couldn't grow in a terrarium, and they're well protected from maybe pets that you have in the house too. And they're great for people that don't like to water a lot, because a terrarium, if it's all planted right, created right, you may never water again.
It's like its whole own ecosystem, right?
Yes, it is.
And it runs itself.
Yep.
If you do it right.
It was invented by accident by a Dr. Nathaniel Ward. And the first terrariums were called Wardian cases. They were pretty neat, and they were a huge, huge benefit. He was a medical doctor, but he was also a naturalist, and he wanted to grow a certain moth. So he took and he couldn't do it. In Europe at that time, I got to back up, was a pretty nasty place. This is in the mid-1800s. Where everybody burned coal and wood, and so the air was pretty nasty. And it was very difficult to grow anything outdoors because of all the smog. Even people had a rough time.
Yeah, I remember. I read about that. Isn't that when they had, like, the big stink, too, with the sewer problem?
And, yep, all of that.
Not a good time.
Yes, not a good time. But he wanted to grow this moth, and he found the chrysalis, and he decided to protect it from mice eating it or the smog getting it. Then he put it in a glass bottle with some soil. And he did that, and of course the chrysalis did develop into a beautiful moth. But he also noticed some plants started to grow in that soil that he put in there. And he said, wow. And he also wanted to, he desired a certain kind of fern, I forget what kind it is, to grow, but because of the smog in Europe, in London there, he could not grow it. And it was growing in that glass bottle. So he took it further and further and started developing these glass cases, which we now call terrariums. And he experimented with it and found he could grow any plant he wanted in this, because it's a totally closed container where the smog can't get to it. And once you place the right amount of moisture in there, the plant can always have moisture and continue to grow in that area, in that case. He just kept, I know I don't have much time, so I'm hurrying this story. He also noticed that possibly the plants are giving off a lot of oxygen, and possibly this could be helpful to humans that have breathing problems. And so he built large terrariums, large Wardian cases, big enough that he could put plants in there and a human could go in there and sleep for the night. And, of course, that's like an oxygen tank then they were sleeping in. And he found that to be very beneficial, and that worked out. You know, eventually we became invented the oxygen tent, even to help people with breathing problems, and this all come from just trying to grow a moth. But also at that time there was a big plant exchange from one nation to another nation, and all plants had to be shipped by ships. By boat. And, of course, going across the ocean from China or America and back and forth, long trip, took months, salt air so on just affected those plants. A lot of those plants did not survive the trip. And so they tried the Wardian cases, these glass cases, wooden frame with glass panels in it, and was very successful. They were able to ship plants all over the world, and that, of course, meant one of the more famous ones was tea. Tea from China was able to be shipped all over the world and grown because that was a huge drink that made it possible through the terrarium. But I brought a couple examples here. It's nice to get a container that you can put your hand in.
So this is like a cookie jar, fishbowl looking
thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it has to have a lid, though.
It has to have a lid. Very tight-fitting lid. And here's another one, just a jar with a screw-on lid, but still you can put your hand in. And what you're going to want to do is just cover the bottom with a little bit of gravel. That's all. And clean gravel, like you get in the aquarium shop. And then a little bit of charcoal, activated charcoal, just like you get for your fish tanks. That's going to keep the water purified so it doesn't go stagnant.
So that's sprinkle that on top? Or below?
On top of that gravel.
On top of the gravel, okay.
Yeah, just, you know, a half inch of gravel, then a half inch of charcoal. Now you can put some good, fresh potting soil in there as deep as you want. You know, if most of the time you're going to get small plants that are in 2 and 3 inch pots, so they're going to be 2 or 3 inches tall. So that's all the soil you need in there. Then you can plant it. And I'm hurrying through this. Then you can put those plants in there, and you can crowd them. Don't worry about giving them a lot of space, because in this terrarium, their growth is going to be slow because you're not going to over-fertilize them. You're not going to put it in a window. That's a bad place because that sun coming through can overheat inside there and affect the plants. So that soil, put as many plants as you want in there, crowd them. Then water it. The watering is the toughest part. You want to dampen the soil, but no more. And now this is going to be an experiment. Then you're going to put the lid on and wait for a day or two. And if the container fogs up inside and stays fogged up, then you've got too much water. So we'll just remove the lid for a day or two, let some of it evaporate, then try again. And once the container reaches a stage where it fogs up overnight, but then clears up through the day, you've got just the right amount of moisture. Never open the lid again, except for maybe to clean the plants off a little bit, because you will get some dead foliage, and that can be unsightly. So clean that up.
Neat.
Then it can last for decades and decades.
Wow, really?
There are some out there that are going on 50, 60 years old. I've got a couple at home that I haven't touched in, gosh, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 years.
And what kind of plants are those? And especially for a beginner, what's the best kind of plants to start with?
Yeah, that's extremely important. You just can't put any plant in there. Boy, I can go through a big list, but you can look it up on the internet. You know, baby's tears, earth star, ferns, moss, parlor palms, pothos, ivy, creeping fig, phytonia, which is nerve plant, and it goes on and on. There's lots and lots of house plants, we call them.
Now, what's in your specific case that you said you had for a couple decades? What are you growing?
In there, I'm growing mostly pothos and what else? I can't even remember, you know. It's been there so long that I kind of ignore it anymore.
After a decade or two, you start to kind of like just have it in the background.
which, you know, it's also nice because I have cats, and cats like to disturb plants. So the only way I can have houseplants is in a closed terrarium, so I can still have my house plants there, because I can't find that space that they can't climb. You know, it's impossible. So there are lots of plants that you can put in a terrarium, tropical plants, but you can also make a desert one. And of course, there the water is going to be extremely important. There you can put the cactus and so on there, because There are certain animals that will get into even cactus. I remember at one time, a boring story here, that I wanted to grow a bunch of cactus from seed, and I was successful. They all came up. I had a good dozen of them on the windowsill, and one day I came home, and they were all gone. The cats, I don't know how the cats didn't get damaged, but they got to all my cactus. So
yuck.
Yeah. So now I have to grow them in a terrarium, but again, watering is going to be extremely, extremely important. You don't even want to dampen the whole soil. And I'm going on and on here, aren't I?
Well,
last show
right.
of the year.
It's the last show of the year. Yeah. We went a couple minutes over.
Okay.
But any last words about terrariums today?
Yeah. Great kids project. You can almost put them anywhere in the house. Experiment with. Some plants take very, very little light. So I think it's well worth a try. And anybody can find a nice container. You can go to anywhere and find these nice glass containers, even at the Goodwill shop for only a buck or two.
And they do have to be glass. You can't cheap out and do plastic.
Oh, you can do plastic too. Yeah.
As long as it shouldn't be airtight, or should it be?
Yeah, it really helps to be airtight.
Have a nice
seal
on it.
That way you never have to water it again, and it just adds to all the mystery there.
Neat. Okay, yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much for talking terrariums today and talking everything for the whole season. So,
well, thanks.
The Gardening Show, sponsored by Worth W. Smith. We love it, and we love you, Bob, and we hope to see you again. It's The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM. Have a great winter.
Hey, thanks. You too.
All right.